we are being hypnotized by people like this. Newsreaders, politicians, teachers, lecturers.
We are in a country and in a world that is being run by unbelievably sick people. The chasm between what we're told is going on and what is really going on is absolutely enormous.
Oh yeah, dude. There's some Nephilim shit. It's like we all know what's going down, but no one's saying shit. What happened to the home of the brave? These motherfuckers, they controlling us now, and no one's talking about how they made us try to be slaves. And everybody's just walking around, head in the clouds, and won't awaken to a dead in the grave. But then it's too late, we need to be ready to raise up. Welcome to the end of day. Everybody is slaves, only some are aware.
Welcome back, everybody, to a very special episode of Nephilim Death Squad, the fourth installment in our Dissecting the Book of Revelation series with none other than Ed Mabry. We are running a little bit short on time today, so we're just going to get straight into it. Ed made big promises on the last episode. He said that we were going to talk about the Synagogue of Satan, which I know the chat is very excited for. I'm very excited for. And as if that wasn't enough, we're going to get into the rapture today. So, really excellent. I'm pumped to be here, pumped to get into this. So, Ed, take it away. It's in your hands. We trust you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on today. So we're going to fly through this as much as we can, because we're going to be covering like two extremely controversial topics. Probably the most controversial in all of eschatology is the rapture. And of course, anytime you're dealing with anything that's dealing with the Jews, the people of God's chosen people, it's going to be you're hitting the third rail. So let's just dive into it. So last time we talked about the seven letters of seven churches. And there was a part I'd be remiss if we didn't touch on, because it's touched on twice in those seven letters. In the letters to the churches at Smyrna and at then the church at Philadelphia, Jesus specifically mentions a group of people called the Synagogue of Satan. He says, basically, there are people who call themselves Jews, but are not. They are the Synagogue of Satan, and they're basically harassing the true church. The church, the church that Jesus approves of. And those two churches in Smyrna and Philadelphia are the only two churches that Jesus had nothing bad to say about them. So they, the Philadelphia church was this faithful church. The Smyrna church was a persecuted church, but they were also being persecuted by these folks who say they're Jews, but they're not, but of the Synagogue of Satan. So who are these people, and why were they so important that Jesus mentioned them twice? So I think it's important just to kind of break it down. What would be the qualifications for these groups? So one, they have to claim to be Jews, the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Number two, they would not actually be Jews, even though they're claiming to be. Three, they'd be of the Synagogue of Satan. So synagogue is obviously where people who practice Judaism worship, but of Satan. So it means that they have, outwardly, they seem to be performing or worshiping Jehovah as Jews, but they're actually doing something satanic. So it's a form of Judaism that's actually satanic. And lastly, they have to be harassing the church or persecuting the church. So I would say in the contemporary sense, in the first century, the most likely candidate are people who we would call the Edomites, or the people who are of the land of Edom. The land of Edom are the descendants of Esau, who was the brother of Jacob. Jacob was the progenitor of the nation of Israel. Jehovah changed his name to Israel. His brother was Esau, who you remember the story. He was hairy, had lots of red hair, and Jacob kind of cheated him out of his birthright. And anyway, they were always the enemies of Israel. When Rome conquered that area, actually, the Jews had basically conquered the Edomites. They were kind of a marginalized group. When the Romans conquered Israel back in like the second century BC, they just figured the Edomites were just another segment of Jewish people. They thought they were all the same, but the Jewish people rejected Rome, while the Edomites embraced Rome. So the Romans gave them a little more favorable, preferable treatment. For example, King Herod, if you remember from the story of the birth of Jesus, Herod was the king at the time. Herod was an Edomite. He was an Idumean. So he was not actually Jewish, even though he was the king. You remember when the wise men came from the east to see Jesus, they first went to Herod and said, "Where is he who was born king of the Jews?" That's kind of an insult to Herod. They say, "Yeah, you're not the king of the Jews. You were appointed. We're looking for the person who was born king of the Jews. So the Edomites were, they were forced to convert in the, I think like the 4th century BC. The Jews conquered them and they forced them to convert. But what they did, they embraced the Talmud, a Talmudic Judaism, which actually had some paganistic aspects to it. So they were doing a form of Judaism that was actually pagan, satanic. And they still, were harassing the Christians. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Does that hold still for today, this form of Talmudic Judaism? Because a lot of people, I mean, I'm sure you see the hot topic right now is this anti-Semitism thing.
Yeah.
But for me, it's, I mean, I make a lot of jokes online, but for me, the more nuanced approach is the Talmudic Jew that not just studies, but practices what it says there. Because I'm like, that's almost telling them to be my outright enemy. Or, and that I am, you know what it says.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's just a strange thing, because now I'm like treating you like you're kind of treating me. I'm aware of how you want to treat me. So you're my enemy. But it's also been like, I've been hit with the cudgel and saying like, well, if you're saying that they're your enemy, then you're this, you're that, you're this, we're that one. I'm like, I don't know. They're telling us, right?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit when we talk about maybe who this group is today. But in the Talmud, there's paganistic aspects in it. You know, it talks about these, you know, the Kabbalah. If you know anything about Kabbalah, that's not straight Judaism from the Bible. There's, again, paganistic aspects to it. And I'll kind of leave it at that. I'm not an expert on the Talmud, but I do know that Kabbalah definitely has some mysticism in it that is not biblical at all. And that's what the Edomites, that's what they were into.
Well, in that book, they say that Jesus is boiling in piss and
excrement.
Excrement and piss, yeah. Right. So it's obviously not like religious. I mean, this book is not even, it's not divinely inspired. This book is insane. So
it is.
It would really be like a combination of those two things, right? Something Kabbalistic, this mystic practice that has, if you are focusing on the occult aspect of it, there's this Saturnian worship that's indicative to this Kabbalah practice. And then that in conjunction with the Talmud. So really what you would have is you would have this occult practicing mysticism combined with essentially a handbook that tells you to be subversive. And that in conjunction is what would create, in my opinion, a formidable enemy. Even if we're not talking about the Talmud, you have some form of mysticism and some form of text that tells you to be subversive, and that creates a real problem.
Yeah, absolutely does. So there's a lot wrong with Talmudic quote unquote Judaism. And I know we don't have time to dive into that today, maybe another time. But yeah, I think that because the Edomites, Idumeans were practicing that, I think that they would probably be the people who Jesus was referring to in that contemporary setting. But as we talked about last time, those seven letters also outline all of church history from the apostolic age all the way up to our current age, which means that whoever these people are, they're still in effect. So the question is, who can we say today fits those criteria, claim to be Jews but are not Jews, practicing a form of satanic Judaism and harassing the church? Well, on faithbyreason.net, I do a whole episode on this, and I dive into a bunch of different people who could possibly fit the category. But I want to talk about a few of them right now. The first two, they're actually technically Christian groups who claim to be Israelites or Jews. One of the group is people who embrace something called replacement theology. Replacement theology, people who believe that the church replaced Israel, that when Israel rejected their Messiah, that they forfeited all the promises that God gave them, particularly in Deuteronomy chapter 28, where it talks about all these great blessings that, you know, Jehovah will bestow upon Israel, that they'd be just basically materially prosperous. They'd have health and wealth. So they believe that the Jews forfeited that when they rejected Jesus, and the church has that now. Well, the problem is that it doesn't say that anywhere in the Bible that the church replaces Israel. In fact, it contradicts Romans chapters 10, 11, and 12, where the Apostle Paul basically spends those three chapters just hammering home the fact that God is not done with the Jews. That although the church is dominant in this age, that there is still you know, there is still a plan for the Jewish people. And we'll talk about
remnant
when we get to the tribulation, because that's one of the main purposes of the tribulation, is to finally get the Jews to accept their Messiah so that he can come back. That is a prerequisite to Jesus returning, is that the Jews admit their mistake and accept him. And which is one of the reasons why Jews have been so persecuted throughout history, because the forces of evil, the evil Elohim and the Nephilim are trying to get rid of them so that they cannot request Jesus' return. But getting ahead of myself there.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah, go ahead.
The Jews that are there in Israel now, mm-hmm. are these the Jews? Are these the same guys?
Short answer, I don't know. And when I get to talk to about the last group, huh?
There's the story lines up, all the their character that you'd read in the Bible, but like something about them, it's like, I don't even know. Are these the guys? Yeah. Like, what is going on here?
That's an open question that really bothers me. And when I talk about the last group that I think fits the criteria, I think we're going to get to that. That'll be the most controversial aspect of this segment of the show. So replacement theology, it doesn't work because it's not biblical. And also it's conditional. Those promises to Israel were conditional upon them being faithful and obedient. And if they weren't faithful and obedient, the rest of the chapter of chapter 28 talks about all the curses that will come upon them. But replacement theologists never want to talk about that part. They just want to talk about the blessings, but not the curses. The other group that are ostensibly Christian, but claim some type of Jewish heritage, are the people who embrace what's called the 10 lost tribes. Now, this is something you'll find a lot of information on here and there, all over the internet. Basically, what the 10 lost tribes, their theory is that when the third king of Israel, Solomon, he was the most prosperous king of Israel. He had his wisdom, he had riches, but he also started worshiping other Elohim, and he brought idolatry into Israel. And his successors, they caused a civil war between the 10 northern tribes who started worshiping other gods, other Elohim, and the two southern tribes of Benjamin and Judah, who remained relatively faithful. And so they split, and the 10 northern tribes continued to worship other gods. And as promised, they were taken out of the land. Jehovah said, if you go after other Elohim, the land will vomit you out. And they were conquered by the Assyrian Empire. That was the dominant world empire at the time. So we're talking about, I think about 800 BC-ish. They were taken to Assyria, and they, in Assyria, they were kind of dispersed throughout the Assyrian Empire. Now, what the 10 lost tribes say, that after the Assyrian Empire fell, those 10 tribes just began to wander all over the earth, basically. They were dispersed, and they ended up in Northern Europe, where they somehow went from being Middle Eastern Jews to Northern European Caucasians. So they just genetically shifted. And these were the folks who basically founded America. They were the Puritans. And during the Reformation, they became Christians, and they were the Puritans and the Pilgrims, and who landed in the U.S. in 1620. So that now the United States is the new Israel, and Caucasian Americans are the actual 10, are the Jews. And that's, frankly, as stupid as it sounds, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely asinine. There's no proof of it. Not only is there no proof of it, there is actually proof against it. First of all, it didn't happen the way they're saying it happened. Now, the Assyrian Empire absolutely conquered the 10 northern tribes, but they didn't disperse. What happened was they were in the Assyrian Empire, but then the two southern tribes remained faithful for the most part, but they eventually went the wrong way, and they started worshiping idols, and they were conquered. They were conquered by the Babylonians under Nebuchadnezzar. But before Nebuchadnezzar conquered them, he had already conquered the Assyrian Empire. So the Assyrian Empire was now part of the Babylonian Empire. So those 10 tribes that were in Assyria became part of the Babylonian Empire. Then when Babylon took over, conquered the two southern tribes, they became part of the Babylonian Empire. They were all taken to Babylon. So now you have all 12 tribes in Babylon, okay? And we know this because the prophet Ezekiel was sent to the northern tribes, and while the prophet Daniel was a prophet to the southern tribes. So they were all in Babylon. The Babylonian Empire was conquered by the Medo-Persian Empire. So now you have all 12 tribes in the Persian Empire. Then the Persian king, Cyrus, he decided to let the Jews all go back to their homeland. So now all 12 were allowed to go back to Israel. Some did, some didn't. Some had been, they'd been there for almost 100 years, so many of them had never even been to Israel, so they were comfortable where they were. But a lot of them went back. So all 12 tribes went back to Israel. They weren't lost. And not only were they not lost then, and they did certainly didn't go to Europe. There's no evidence of that. And it certainly didn't magically transform into white people. They were where they were. And we know that even at the time of Jesus, 300 years later, on the day of Pentecost in the book of Acts, when it says clearly that the Jews of all tribes were there in Israel for the Feast of Pentecost, which happened about 50 days after Jesus' death and resurrection. All that to say, even 300 years after their so-called dispersal, they knew who they were, and they were still in Israel. So there's no such thing as the 10 lost tribes. That's just, it's frankly, it's kind of anti-Semitic in a certain way, because it's basically saying there's no such thing as Jews, that white Americans are Jews, which is, I mean, it's nonsense. And the biggest question to me for people who Christians who want to be Jews is like, why? Why would you want to be a Jewish if you could be part of the church? The promises to the church are so superior to the promises made to Israel. If the promises made to Israel were conditional, the promises to the church are not conditional.
Yeah. There's no benefit to being Israel. Israel just means like, hey, I didn't forget about you, even though you've screwed up every step of the way. Yeah.
And also, the church is the bride of Christ, whereas Israel is the friend of the bridegroom, basically the best man in this whole wedding scenario, which we're going to talk about.
Dude, people will be mad at hearing you say that.
I know. Well, it's not me. I didn't make this. This is in the Bible. They're called the friend of the bridegroom. They're called the friend of God, which is a good position to be in. But what would you rather be in relationship to Jesus, his bride or his friend? Like, you know, I'm married. My best friend was the best man in my wedding. I've known him longer than I've known my wife. I've known him for 10 years longer than I know my wife. But my wife shared things that I don't share with my best friend. My wife's name is on the deed to our house, on my bank account, on my investment accounts. If something happens to me, my wife gets everything I have.
Yeah.
So my best friend gets none of that. So what would you rather be, Jesus' buddy or his bride? So
his honored guest.
So it always puzzles me why certain segments of Christians are so desperate to call themselves Israel. So. And I talk about a few others groups in my podcast on who these people are. But for the sake of time, I just want to jump into the group that seems to, if what we've learned about them is true, if what's being said about them is true, they would actually qualify. Because the two other groups, the 10 lost tribe people and the replacement theologists, yeah, they claim to be Jews. They're not Jews. So they meet the first two criteria. But they're not worshiping Satan under the guise of Judaism, and they're not harassing the church. Unless you disagree with them, they might harass you, and you'll probably get some some harassing messages from this episode. But they don't qualify. The other group that's very controversial would be the ones, people who are called the Khazarians, or in some places Ashkenazis. What is Khazaria? Who are the Khazarians? The Khazarians were people who were part of the Khazarian Empire in the land of Khazar, in Khazaria, in around 800 AD. They were a little north of the Caspian Sea, a little northeast of Turkey. So where they were located, they happened to be at the crossroads of the trade routes between Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. So if you wanted to get your goods trading from one area to another, you were probably going to pass through Khazaria. Because of that, the Khazarians began to charge like taxes and road tolls for people who were the merchants who were going back and forth. And they became very wealthy. And they, you know, charged a lot of money for, you know, for the right to pass through their land through those trade routes. And they would start, and some people couldn't afford it, so they would start loaning the money at interest to do that. And they basically got a really bad reputation. The Khazarians were basically racketeers, and they were thought to be very unscrupulous, dishonest, just really, you know, people who would cheat and
rubbing their hands and shit.
Yeah, exactly. So as a result of this, one of the few times in history, the Christian, quote unquote, Christian Catholic West and the Islamics in the Middle East got together and said, look, these guys are screwing us both over. So they came in and jointly just took over the area. And they told the Khazarians, here's what's going to happen. You guys are done as far as charging us all this money. And in order to keep you straight, we want you to convert to one of the Abrahamic religions. By the way, what I'm telling you now is something that you could read about in many books. One I recommend is called The 13th Tribe by Arthur Koestler, who happens to be of this bloodline, he himself. So that's one of the places I get it. You can get it from a lot of places. They were told that they needed to convert to one of the quote-unquote Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, or Islam. They chose Judaism for various reasons, but one of them was that Talmudic Judaism was in line with their more paganistic types of worship, whereas Islam and Christianity are monotheistic, and you know, the Talmud offered a form of religion that was closer to what they were already doing. So they converted to Judaism, and they began to call themselves Jews. They were not physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They were basically, you know, Eastern European or maybe the Southern Russian in their genetic stock. But
what I'm hearing, Ed, is it makes it so hard to even get past the Khazarians. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I hear what you're telling me here, and I'm like, hey, every bell is going off, like ding, 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 ding.
Here's a crazy part too. Something that, like, I've thought about and joked about, but as all this is going on in the Middle East right now, and everyone has this JQ, and everyone's having this, oh my goodness, we're noticing. In Ukraine, they have just wiped out an entire generation of people, an entire generation. They drafted men up to 44, and last I saw, people with Down syndrome, because they're fighting an unwinnable war.
Yeah.
So, what happens with that place, which is very, it looks very much like where these people came from? Is this like a bait and switch? Like, what's going on?
It's a really good question. It's so. Not only is it controversial, it's confusing because, yeah, you're right. Ukraine is in that general area where, if you look at the maps of where Khazaria was in, you know, about 1500 years ago, give or take. Yeah, it's part of that area. It's part of Ukraine and Georgia, you know, the Eastern European Georgia and some of those areas. So, you know, is there something to that? Is this something that's really, is this like still a genetic war happening? Are we talking about some type of attempted genocide?
At the least, it certainly does a great job of continuing to obfuscate the history.
Mm-hmm. But it also raises the question of, like, the importance of, like, a certain genetic people to be in a certain spot for whatever. Like, if you're saying that these entities are local to this area and they chill in Ukraine all the time, this is a very long game to play to get rid of. To like push Ukrainians out in this really weird backhanded way. It's a long game to play unless you had something real to gain. Like,
So I want to say this real quick. Oh, sorry, I was getting a phone call. So I want to just wrap up the Khazarian part because then I want to talk about some of the reasons why we don't know who these people are and why it's been obfuscated from history. So basically, once the Khazarians were conquered and, you know, converted, they were dispersed, and they spread a lot of them throughout Europe, where they were still a marginalized people. However, one thing that they did keep with them was their banking practices, and so they were used by the Catholic Church as proxy bankers because it was illegal in Catholicism to charge usury, to basically loan money at interest. But these quote unquote Jewish Khazarians had no problem with it. So again, the popes use them as their proxies to loan money without actually, you know, being without getting all the negativity of being, you know, someone loaning money at interest.
It's very Talmudic.
Yeah. It's like the Shabbos Goy could do it. Like, there are Shabbos Goy, but for usury. Amazing.
Unbelievable.
So being the bankers of the Pope, they became very powerful. And it can be argued that they are maintaining that power to this day. So the Rothschilds fall into this category. You know, they were called Rothschild, means, you know, Roth, red, shield. So they were called the Red Shield. That's where they come from. And so they have a lot of power, and probably maybe enough power to make sure that this history is difficult to come by. So that's why it takes researchers like Arthur Koestler, who again is part of, by his own admission, it traces his lineage back to Khazaria. And he's like, yeah, this is what happened. That's in his book, The 13th Tribe. He talks about that in detail.
And it's so easy to do.
As many, but if you as many people, as many sources as there are that say that, you know, this is what happened with Kazaria, there are also many sources that dispute this. They're saying, no, this isn't how it happened, that, you know, the people today who call themselves Jewish, they can trace their genetics back to Middle Eastern, you know, bloodlines. So all that to say, as much as convincing as the whole Kazarian thing is, it's not complete. It's inconclusive. You know, I'm not sure. And I want to be very careful where I tread on this, because, again, I don't want to mistakenly disparage who God's chosen people are. Yeah. And to answer your question from before, Top, again, I just don't know. Are the people in Israel, are they Khazarians? Are they actual descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? I truly don't know. I mean, one of my questions that I have to God all the time that I actually haven't gotten an answer to is, who are the Jews? I really want to know. I want to make sure that I'm giving the actual Jews the respect they deserve, but I also don't want to give another group who doesn't deserve that respect, you know, I don't want to give that to them either.
And that's I wish that more churches would have that kind of stance, but like, one of the things I don't like is, it feels like, I say this often, I said, it feels like America's been conquered at this point. Like, yeah. When I look around and I see what's going on, I'm like, I'm not sure who the conqueror is, but it's a soft conquer because nobody's really dead, but everything is upside down.
Yeah,
completely. You know, people are dying, sure, but it's not like they're marching through the streets cutting your head off. And I'm just kind of like, who are they?
Yeah.
And there's no real answer, dude. It's,
you know, Ed, maybe, and I'm sure you're going to get to this point. So if this is premature, then just tell me, we'll get there. But there's this verse in the Bible, in Revelations, where it's describing this star, right? The star of Remphan.
Oh, no, and that's in the book of Acts, I believe.
Oh, that's actually in the book of Acts. Okay, I thought it was in Revelations. For some reason, I thought we were going to get there. Okay, so this is actually a good question then, because we wouldn't have gotten here. And the contention is that the Star of David is never actually described in the Bible as being the Star of David.
Nope.
And the closest reference you can find to it is something that is described as the Star of Remphan, and of Acts, the Tabernacle of Moloch, I believe.
So that's Acts 7:43. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you read that, Top? Because this is very fascinating. It's like, I, as someone who had no religious upbringing, just assumed that there was obviously some sort of backing for the Star of David and the history of it. And
nope. They just named it that. It's also called the Shield of Solomon. And again, there's no... Now, that could be more true, because Solomon went full pagan, but it has nothing to do with David.
That's why my eyes lit up when you said that. I was like, oh,
it
okay.
Says, well. Yea, ye took up the tabernacle of Moloch and the star of your god Remphan. Mm-hmm. It's a commentary.
Star of Remphan and of Saturn? Is that? Or no, it's that Saturn is interchangeable with Remphan.
He says, but ye have borne the tabernacle of your Moloch and your images, the star of your god, which ye made to yourselves. So he's talking about the god Remphan and a star that's modeled after it.
And if you look up the history of Remphan, it's interchangeable with Saturn. And Saturn worship, once again, we talked about Kabbalah, right? Mm-hmm. And how these things are rooted in Saturn worship. And that gets very interesting, because it's kind of a coveted thing, an occulted thing, the idea of Saturn worship. But my very loose understanding is that on the and this is probably going to be a little bit maybe foreign to you, Ed, or maybe not, but on the North Pole of Saturn, there's a hexagonal storm, a perpetual storm that never ends, sort of like a hurricane. Mm-hmm. And it's in the shape of a hexagon, which is the center of the Star of David. So with the Star of David, or the Star of Remphan, people, they get... Yeah, so this is... There you go. There's that image of Moloch that was... resurrected, or erected rather, in Vatican City during 2020, I think. And, you know, the star is very interesting because it's got 6 points, 6 triangles, 6 inner walls in the hexagon. So people think that it's a symbol for Satan. And that, like I said, if you look into Remphan, this is another name for the entity Saturn, which is, you know, the Roman deity. But it's our contention that these deities were the fallen, and they just went by several different names from one group to another. So there is this really interesting through line. And then when you hear the tabernacle, or I'm sorry, the synagogue of Satan, even the idea that Jews observed the Sabbath on Saturday, you know, there's some contention with that because it's Saturday. Right. So there is something phonetically, right? Within the language, there's interesting, compelling aspects. Within the symbolism, there's interesting, compelling aspects. Within the names and how they change from one group to another, there is this through line. It just becomes a little bit difficult to pin down. But when we're talking about the synagogue of Satan and a group of Jews that are only Jews in appearance or forwardly facing that seems like you're starting to put together a very compelling image of who these people might be and how they're hiding.
If you had
hiding.
To put money on it, Ed, like if I was like, all right, gun to head, what do you say? What do you think is going on? You're honest, your opinion, which reflects nothing on your research. It's just whatever you...
Yeah, my opinion, which again, not completely conclusive, but I lean towards the Khazarian theory. I think it just... If you're talking about circumstantial evidence, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence there. Mm. I mean, I've heard it from so many different sources that are independent of each other who basically tell the same story. And it makes so much sense from just the idea of what the fallen angels, the evil Elohim want to do and their hatred for the actual Jews. What would be a better way to do that than to have them completely replaced by this other group that is, again, we're not practicing actual Judaism, actually practicing a paganism. And they're worshiping Saturn and, you know, the black cube, which, interesting, if you go to Mecca, there's a black cube there. But that's a whole other thing to get.
But to even another. That, right? So the hexagon is a black cube. It's a cube that stood on its corner. If you look down on that cube, it makes the shape of a hexagon. And I'm not too well-versed in it, but I know the Jews... they do have a practice where they have a black cube on their foreheads, you know, for, I forget something with a T, I forget how it's pronounced, but the black cube is like, you can find it. There's this
Here's
trail.
The crazy part though.
Yeah.
How much of this is all good and fine, but how much of the population is actually knowledgeable to this stuff?
Very, you know, very little. I would say that you would probably find people who themselves are, you know, say that they're Jewish and actually have the Eastern European background who don't know anything, who've never heard of Khazaria. Yeah. I would have never heard of it, even though it was an actual place. I mean, that's not made up. I mean, there's nothing. I never learned about anything about it in school when I was in college. And I was actually, I was going to be a history major. I changed my major, but I was taking a lot of history, world history, nothing, not a word about Khazaria. Yeah. It's been literally erased from mainstream textbooks.
We can barely get a good reading on what happened during World War II.
Yeah.
No clue what happened.
Right.
And now we're talking about centuries before that.
Like, yeah. The only thing I know about World War II is what my grandfather, who, you know, he's passed away several, you know, a couple decades ago, but he fought there. So that's the only person I know who can, in a couple of my older uncles who are also passed away. At least I know that they were there. They were eyewitnesses, so I can believe what they say, but history is, I hate to be trite, but history is a mystery. Because so much of it has just been, what's the old term? History is written by the victors.
Yeah.
And as you said, Top, if we've been conquered, self-conquered, then whoever conquered us is writing the history and leaving things out. So it's so, why it's so inconclusive. And we have to get, you know, gather bits and pieces of our history and try to put them together, which is what Arthur Koestler did when he wrote The 13th Tribe and some other people who've written books on this. It's just difficult.
Today's episode is brought to you by PurgeSuddenly.com. What if I told you that more people have died from parasites than have ever died from war? What if I told you that cancer, multiple sclerosis, acne rosacea, and rheumatoid arthritis can all be treated with parasite medication? Rid your body of these all too common parasites. Purge Parasite Cleanse is made with ingredients like zinc, carrot powder, garlic, black walnut. We're talking all natural ingredients that are good for you. Or try their Digestimes to promote healthy gut bacteria and aid in digestion. These, as well as any other products on PurgeSuddenly.com, can be purchased with promo code Nephilim. NEPHILIM at PurgeSuddenly.com.
So what I'm saying, like, look at the way, so our history right now will be reflected later on as the news. Like, people will probably find newspapers, they probably find articles or whatever is left of what happened in America. And the news is complete fabrication. So it's like, of course we've been conquered. That's exactly what I do if I conquered. I just lie to the people so they don't even know how we got here. And
man, it's funny, right? Because you have this idea that history is written by the victors after the event. And it's like, well, as people that live in 2024, you can see that as the events are unfolding, they're lying as it's happening. So we can't get more than a week beyond an event without it honestly, totally being obfuscated.
It's probably a common technique. And I don't want to, I'll let Ed go on to his next thing. But, you know, we're talking about, you said the Persians conquered the Babylonians and then they were conquered by the next empire.
Well, yeah, the Greeks conquered them and then the Romans conquered the Greeks.
Right, but there's a lot of time in between that. It's like, I didn't just conquer and then go. They had to assimilate a lot of these people too. Yeah. And there's probably a science behind it. And if you looked at that science, it's definitely an occult book. It's probably what's happening in America.
Yeah, all of these groups had different ways of assimilating them. The Assyrians, the ones who conquered the 10 northern tribes, what they would do is they would take half of them to Assyria, and then would take a bunch of people from Assyria and put them in the land they conquered. That way, they never had a national heritage. So that's one way. Well, Rome did something different. Well, the Greeks, they forced everyone to learn Greek, which is why during the time of Jesus, everyone spoke Greek. And the New Testament was written in Greek, because that's how they got people to, you know, to coalesce. And the Romans, they allowed everyone who they conquered to keep all of their gods and their religions as long as they just added the Roman Caesar to their pantheon. So yeah, everyone has their own way of assimilating the groups that they conquer. And this, I think this erasing way is, history would be one good way to do it.
This way is also to worship the government. I mean, I feel like that's the main way. Replace God with the government, and then you have somewhat functioning society.
Yeah. Which is just a way of saying, you know, worshiping man.
Yeah.
I do a whole series on Faith by Reason that I call the origin of human government. So if you go to Faith by Reason and go to the right navigation area, there's a category called human government where I go into detail about how, you know, about what our government is and what all human governments are and what their purpose is. And their purpose is basically to homogenize us and stamp out our uniqueness to make us all follow the same rules and laws so that none of us can be quote unquote great. And only the elites at the top can be great. But yeah, that's a whole other subject.
Yeah. They maintain their bloodlines. I mean, it sounds, again, they've made us sound like a
there it is.
Racist or whatever it is for saying this, but there's a reason why the bloodlines are so important. There's a reason why parts of the Bible start off with like, this one begot that one, this one begot that one. There's got to be something important about that.
It's a genealogy tracking.
It. Yeah. Right. It sounds cold-blooded to me to say, but like, if everyone else is paying attention, I mean, even Hitler was trying to do some kind of like this Aryan race thing, right? Why is it the genetics? Like, everyone's so focused on this blood, and everyone here is telling us, don't worry about that diversity. And I'm not saying it's not a good, like, whatever, do whatever, but it's
just kind
of like,
right. Well, it does seem
why
like
are you doing that?
Everything is really, the general public is told not to worry about it, but the most important thing in all the stories seems to be genetics. That seems to be what it's really about.
I can say this because of the name of this show. A lot of it is to preserve Nephilim bloodlines.
Yes.
Specifically. You know where the term blue blood comes from? You know, we call royals blue bloods.
Right, yeah.
Because back in the day, Nephilim were thought to have very dark blood.
Oh, that's why their skin was like a translucent but blue. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
They were thought to have very dark, almost bluish black blood. And remember the people who were always the rulers of the kings and the, you know, all the monarchs were thought to come from the Nephilim. If you have Queen Elizabeth, you know, who died a few years ago, she actually has on record saying that she could trace her bloodlines all the way back to Samaria. Samaria is Babel. So she's saying she can trace her bloodline of her family all the way back to that time.
Yeah. So well, it's the same thing with the presidents. Remember that little girl was like back in, I forget what year it was, some elementary school child was tasked with making a family tree of, and they said, pick a famous person. And she picked Obama. And the next thing she knew, she found out that Obama was related to like everyone but one of the 43 prior presidents.
Yeah.
And you know, and also the royalty in England, you know, so it's all just one big, they're really concerned about it, like you said, Top, and they're telling us not to be concerned with it at all.
Yeah. Even the Aryans of the Caucasus Mountains were thought to be part of a tribe of Nephilim. And because of that supernatural blood, that would make them, in Hitler's mind, more capable of doing mysticism. So I think a lot of the reasons behind keeping these certain bloodlines pure, that's why the royals only marry each other. They want to keep that Nephilim blood going, in my opinion.
Man, it's so crazy.
It's nuts. And remember that, there's a seed war happening. In Genesis chapter 3, God says, I'm to the Nahash, the so-called serpent, who's actually, the Nahash means the shining one. He was, Lucifer, the light bearer. He said, I'm going to put enmity between you and the woman and between your seed and her seed. So there are two seeds. So Satan, the Nahash, the shining one, Lucifer, has a seed that he's trying to preserve. And that seed will be the enemy of the seed of the woman, which is one of the titles of Jesus.
Yeah. This is where you get into a lot of contention because people say,
It'll
crush his head, but bruise our heel. But there's a lot of contention there because you get into this, this fast stop with people. They go, angels couldn't procreate. They weren't physical. And then once you get into that, it's like now you have to start to the very beginning is a full stop for some people, and you can't even have the conversation. We've experienced that a lot, I'm sure. Yeah. Ed, you've run into that sort of a thing.
Right.
And it seems to be something that people really are not receptive to whatsoever.
This sounds crazy. This might sound crazy, and I'm going to use all the wrong words, but so when a fallen angel gets a woman pregnant, that's a Nephilim.
Right.
When God does it, it's like it is the same idea of a Nephilim, right? Because it's this angelic body that is now impregnating a woman to bring forth a hybrid. I don't know. That just sounds. I know that Jesus wasn't a hybrid, but this is something real special. Like how to do it right.
Because God didn't have intercourse with the Holy Spirit didn't have intercourse with Mary. He basically just created he spoke a life into existence in her womb. So it wasn't her genetic. It had to be because he had to be a man in order to take on the sins of man. But he also could not have been genetically part of he could not be a genetic descendant of Adam because he would have had the same curse on him. So that's why Jesus is called the second Adam. Just like Adam was created without parents, Jesus was created without physical parents. So he basically, because Jesus' whole purpose was to undo what Adam did. In order to undo what Adam did, he had to be created ex nihilo, or out of nothing, as it were, as Adam was.
So God essentially was like, we got to do it again.
Right. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So that's freaking which is amazing. Completely different than how the Nephilim did it, how the fallen angels did it. And for people who say, well, the angels can't be physical, really? What about all the times in the Bible where angels physically interact with people? You had Abraham who held court with God Jehovah and two other Elohim who came to visit him, and they ate food. So obviously they have the ability to materialize. You know, one angel killed 186 Syrians I think it's in 1 or 2 Kings.
What is that?
The angels in Sodom and Gomorrah, they physically dragged Lot and his family out. And the people who there who wanted to have intercourse with them, they weren't saying, I'm having intercourse with a mist or a spirit. No, they were physical beings. They have the ability. I think we talked about this in the very first time I was on your show, about how when angels, Elohim become material, become a part of our world, they don't become more solid. They become less solid because, they're our world. Yeah, we talked about that. So yeah, they can manifest physically. And when we get to Revelation chapter 6, we're going to talk about how angels, the fallen angels, are all kicked out of heaven. And by the heavens, I mean the spiritual realm, and they are forced to be on earth. And they will be forced into material work, into our material realms. So they will be physical. So that's, the Bible is very clear that these entities can, under certain circumstances, manifest in what we would consider physical form.
So when we first started, I told you we were constrained for time. I just wanted to give you a heads up.
I also wanted to say, David, This is a banger episode so far.
I know, dude. I'm so mad that I have like a short time with this one. Just keep in mind that we have about 25 more minutes, 30 minutes. So pick up where you want, Ed.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we may have to save the rapture to next week. Because
that's fine.
I don't want to shortchange anyone.
Hopefully it doesn't happen.
Huh?
We'll talk about it next week.
That's funny. Hopefully we don't get raptured between now and then. Okay, so let's continue with this synagogue of Satan.
So So basically, if you look, if this is true, if what Arthur Koestler and people like him are saying about the Khazarians is true, then they would fit the categories. They would claim to be Jews, but not actually be the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They would actually, they're more, you know, Slavic, Northern Turkish in their genetic stock. They would be the synagogue of Satan. They would be practicing a form of Judaism, which is actually paganistic. And they would be harassing Christians because there is that animosity. And if you go with the idea that these people have a lot of influence in our world, in our media, Christians, it's open season on Christians and has been for a long time. So you could definitely say that they're harassing Christians. They would fit the criteria if this is who they are.
Yeah, I used to say, and now I'm more comfortable interjecting because I know we're not going to get to the rapture today. So I never didn't believe Christianity. I always found it compelling. And one of the things that always kept it on the table for me was the fact that like I could see, I've always been a bit of a contrarian. Mm-hmm. And whenever people all subscribe to doing a thing or all pull away from a thing, I usually move in the opposite direction of that. And what I saw was this like perfect willingness for people to dunk on Christianity, and not just in their personal lives, but on television, on comedy specials, in movies, in Hollywood,
to your face,
and to the tunes of hundreds of thousands or millions of views, right? Millions of eyes are on this, and I always went, well, that's strange. Why is it open season on Christianity? Why does nobody stop and think that that's strange? And so that always kind of kept it on the table for me because I didn't see that with other religions. You know, I didn't see that with Muslims. I didn't see that with Jews. I didn't see that. It was strictly with Christianity was the punching bag.
Yeah, there are only two groups. There are only two groups right now who are safe to attack. That is Christians and white males, which you guys probably know being. So everyone else is protected. You cannot say, no matter what atrocities you can contribute to a certain group, you cannot say anything bad about them. And I will say this, and I'm not speaking of all Muslims, because I know someone went to school with them, perfectly fine people, but there are obviously a group of them who do atrocities, and they're completely protected. You cannot go into a college campus and say anything factual. Like, you can't say that it's part of certain Islamic sects that women have to be covered from head to toe.
Well, here's the thing, that's being quickly pushed out. I don't know if you've paid attention to some current events, but those now Islamic college students who are protesting Israel are just being like they're like, no, they put the squash on that. So like that little bit of diversity that or inclusion that they had is out the window. I mean, they're like
in the past, like rubber 2 months, maybe.
Yeah, I've been paying attention
because it's quick, man.
Yeah, some of it's happened on the campus where I went to school. So I've been keeping a little bit of tabs on that. But what you find interesting is that they'll say that, Christians, they say that women aren't equal. And, the Bible says that women aren't shouldn't have rights. First of all, it doesn't say that. But secondly, how are you dumping on the Bible for that when you have another group that openly says that you have to be completely covered and you really don't have certain rights? But
I watched a video of a woman in some Muslim country the other day getting beat with a rod for showing her hair.
Right.
Yeah. And then I thought that the general public around them was like, no, no, no. And really what it was like, hey, 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 share the rod. And so some other dude grabbed the rod and was like, cacao. And I was like, whoa, that's wild.
Can you imagine could you imagine if some off the wall, quote unquote, Christian church did anything close to that, what the outcry would be?
There are people chomping at the bit, wanting that to happen, wishing that Christianity was the aggressor that they need it to be in order to persecute it.
That's the thing. This is where we, and now it's becoming like a cultural episode, but where people are starting to worry me is that they mm-hmm. they recognize that there is something, there's an issue, and then they immediately go into this totalitarian sort of ideology where, like, you see it, I'm like, oh, it's coming again. I'm like, you guys are going to do the same thing again. It's a mistake, because we ended up right back here. Owen Benjamin says it the best. He's like, you have to defeat that stuff that's in your own heart. He says you have to defeat the Jew in your own heart. Like, don't go out there and, like, we're going to, you want to put them in camps? No. It's you that are, you're taking the loan. You're consenting. You're watching the pornography, if you want to blame them for that, or whatever trope you want to blame them for. You're watching the Hollywood movies. Yep. It's like, you just don't do it. It's about the free will and using that to conquer these desires. And that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, that's why I always balk at people who say, well, you know, it's, you know, the Jews run the country. You know, the Jews run this or that or the other. I'm like, well, certain people who happen to be Jewish or claim to be Jewish are doing that. But you can't paint with a broad brush and say that every person who claims to be Jewish, whether they're Jewish through conversion or through genetics, are good or evil.
I say it all the time. I have an uncle and a cousin that are genuinely, like, you're not supposed to have favorite family members. They're kind of my favorite family members. But they are Jewish. But mm-hmm. they pray to Jesus Christ, like, at every meal. And I'm very confused. And I don't ask very many questions because I'm like, maybe it's better that I don't, because if they start asking questions of me and they find out what I'm talking about, you know what's funny, baby? On the internet.
My favorite Jewish person in my family is my wife.
Right.
She's a quarter Jew. So it's like...
Damn, these Jews, I love them.
Yeah. I make jokes. I make jokes, but like it's just to point out something, like, to be provocative and get a conversation going to point stuff out. I don't hate these people, but it's like, hey, something's going on here. Like, just like the point about, like, the bloodlines. That's a hard topic to touch these days, but I feel like if it's right there, like, we should talk about it.
And the jokes are necessary because they combat this apparatus that says, no, don't talk about it. If you talk about it, you're anti-Semitic. And it's like, well, now I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah. I'll just say, I'm anti-Semitic, and now let's talk about it. And they're like, damn, what do we do? But whatever.
But the thing is, you know, Semitic means you're a descendant of Shem.
Yeah, I know.
The Khazarian, if the Khazarian part, if that's true, then you can't be anti-Semitic because they're not... They're not Semitic.
Mm. That's very anti-Semitic of you, Dave.
Oh, man. All right. So let's continue.
Yeah. So they would. So this group, and again, I say it's the same way when I talk about Catholicism, because I wouldn't say I'm not. I said this last week. I have no problem with the Catholic people, as you said, Dob. You know, your wife's part Jewish. My wife was raised Catholic. So, and obviously don't hate her. That would make our marriage really rough. But it's the people at the top, the top people at the top of the hierarchy who are doing things behind the scenes. As I said earlier, that most people who consider themselves Jews aren't even thinking about. I mean, most of the Jewish people I know who I work with and went to school with, they're barely religious, if at all. It's more of a cultural thing with them, which is fine. It's you know, that's a culture. So when I say that, you know, these people are, could be who Jesus is calling the synagogue of Satan, understanding that these are the people who are in the hierarchy of control doing these things, not just your rank and file Jewish person.
And they're also, so what we're doing with Christianity, with our religion, is like I follow people like you and L.A. Marzulli, and I mean, you name it. And I'm like, all right, what is this religion? And they're digging deep on it. And I am just on the journey as they're digging into this thing. Rather than before, for, I don't know, almost 30 years of my life, I just had this base plate. Here's Christianity. I don't know what to do with it. Not really interested. Right. Now I'm digging into it. But the people that are on the other side there, they are digging into and actually practicing their religion. Rather than like the rank and file that is, you know... not Israeli. That is that practices Judaism. Mm-hmm. Are they practicing it in a Talmudic fashion? Probably not. But the people at top probably do know a lot more than the people at the bottom. So, I think it's our job here to get to the bottom of what's going on with Christianity itself, because obviously there's a lot more power here, and it's been forgotten.
Yeah. When you get down to it, whether you want to say they're, you know, Talmudic people doing it or whomever, when you get to the very top, these are people worshiping fallen angels. Mm-hmm. No matter no matter what road they go down to get there, no matter how they label themselves, whether it's, you know, high level Talmudic Jews or people in Kabbalah or Illuminati or whatever, they're all worshiping the fallen angels. And that's really the problem. they're just maybe going out about it a different way. So a couple things. I know we probably won't get to the rapture at all today. I want to bring up, because that I talk about on my episode where I do a deep dive into this. I was at a Bible study with my old mentor, Chuck Missler, who's, you know, passed away a few years ago. And he was really into this kind of stuff, and he was talking about it. And afterwards, there were a couple of guys in the audience who were rabbis, you know, and they were converted. You know, they were Christians, but they were, you know, but they also were rabbinic Jews. And they got into a conversation with Chuck, and I was kind of eavesdropping on it. And they were just talking about, you know, all the Illuminati types, the elites, as we call them. And Chuck was talking about it as well. And these two rabbis would say, yeah, you know, the problem is, you know, because we're talking about the Rothschilds and what they were doing. And the two rabbinic Jews said, yeah, you know, what's the problem is, you know, that we have to deal with all these Edomites. And Chuck was like, what do you mean Edomites? And I was kind of perked up too. I'm like, what do you mean Edomites? Do they still exist? And the two rabbis were like, oh, you guys didn't know? Well, yeah, these people are actually descendants of Edom. Because they said, and this is their history that they were telling, is that the Edomites, who I talked about earlier, after the siege of Jerusalem in 70 AD, they migrated, a group of them migrated up north towards the Caspian Sea and became a part of the Khazarian Empire. And they were the ones, according to these two rabbis, that convinced the Khazarian leadership to accept Judaism when they were given the choice of which Abrahamic religion they wanted to be a part of. So if that's true, then not only would the Edomites have been the contemporary first century people Jesus was talking about, they could be behind what was going on with Khazaria. So these ancient enemies of the Jews, if those rabbis were correct, they're still around doing the same thing they've been doing since day one, opposing the masquerading as God's chosen people. So I found that fascinating.
It's probably a better thing, because like the differentiation needs to be made. So maybe we just, like, instead of saying, oh, the Jays, the Edomites.
Yeah, like, call them Edomites. And that gets to what I was saying with the Rothschilds. They call themselves, the original name was with Bauer. It was Meyer Amschel Bauer. He changed their name to Rothschild, which means red shield. And why that's important is because Edomites were known for being red. Esau had red hair. Edom means red. So when they call themselves Rothschild, Red Shield, maybe they're making a play on the fact that they know their heritage and they know they come from the line of Edom. And of course, we know all about the Rothschilds and the dirt they've been doing for centuries. So it just kind of brought it all together. Like, wow, that's fascinating. Because if that's true, as you were saying, there's a line that connects everything. Could the line be the Edomites?
See, that's what's really messed up about this is like there's an amalgamation. You're saying the Edomites and the Khazarians and all these different things. And it's like the people that everyone's noticing, they're not the Jews. But that has become the fall guy, mm-hmm. right? That has become the face or the mascot that everyone's attacking.
Because
it's like there's so much more new. It's simple. It's
easy. Here's why they're also being attacked, because the Edomites, I like this term so much better, because now I can speak more directly about what I mean. The Edomites are out here fulfilling biblical prophecy, mm-hmm. right? But the Jews, the people, seem to be like supporting. They're in this like in this relationship with these Edomites where they're strung side by side to them.
Yes.
And they have this trauma from persecution, right. The Holocaust, from general history. Jews have been kicked out of everywhere. So now you have this bad guy tied to your side. And instead of saying, like, I'm not with this guy, they're like, yo, we better. And I guess it's just self-preservation. Like, we better, like, support this guy.
Well, it's not only self-preservation. It's this camaraderie and persecution. Like, we're I don't want to use victims because it's so beaten down, that terminology. But for lack of a better term, we are victims and we have that in common. And so regardless of there's really ingrained within the Jewish community this like stick by your brother kind of a thing. Like they really are.
And it's great
until your brother is lying.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, I just think it's interesting because again, Edom comes from Esau. He was Jacob's brother. So they're closely related, but they're very divergent. One God chose one he did not. It said, you know, Jacob, who I love, Esau, I hated. And the hate does not mean like the way we think of hate. Hate is the word meseo, which means to love less. So he's saying, I love Jacob more than I loved Esau. Cause you know, God loved the world. He loves everyone, but some doesn't say he loves everyone equally. He basically says that I chose Jacob. Jacob, I loved more than I loved Esau. But they were twins.
It's an interesting concept. Jacob and Esau
were fraternal twins. Yeah.
I like that concept. I think that it's understandable.
But it also makes like God seem like have so much more of a personality. It's brutal, but yeah. It's like he has preference. He's not just this thing, you know? Yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you by HeavensHarvest.com. In times of uncertainty, peace of mind is priceless, and Heaven's Harvest has your back with the highest quality emergency survival foods and heirloom seeds. They have survival food kits for emergencies that last a week all the way up to 12 weeks. Choose from protein kits, entree kits, breakfast, fruits and veg, and even organic kits for you bougie survivalists. Don't forget to check out their heirloom seeds and choose from their vegetable kits, artisan seed kits, superfood kits, and more. They even have water filtration units. Build your stockpile without breaking the bank by visiting HeavensHarvest.com and using promo code Nephilim at checkout. That's promo code Nephilim, NEPHILIM, for 5% off your entire order.
I have two sons. I have two boys, and it pains me that sometimes I do treat one of them a little more favorably than the other. And I'm like, oh, I got to stop doing that because one of them is a lot like me. So he kind of gets...
I only have one kid, but I have two fucking cats, and one of them is an asshole. And every time that cat meows and hisses at me, I'm like, shut the fuck up. But the other cat, I'm like, that's my baby.
Oh, God. We have preference.
My youngest son is a lot like me. My oldest son, he and I could not be more different. But I mean, I love them both, but I have to check myself to make, because sometimes I'm treating my younger son a little more favorably, and I've got to watch that, because you know that's I don't want to mess up my older son and make him think that I don't love him as much. It's just you know
make him into a Kazarian. I mean, that's the split.
You're an Edomite, kid. Get out of here.
That's the split in the Bible, right? It's generally like Cain and Abel. It's God liked this, he didn't like that for whatever reason. Right. And he liked it, but not that much. And
right, exactly. Like
that person goes nuts.
Yeah, it wasn't that Cain's gift was bad. It was just Abel's was better. Abel was a blood sacrifice, and that's what Jehovah asked for. And so Cain's like, no, I know you asked for this, Jehovah, but I'm going to give you my best, even though it's not what you asked for. And Jehovah's like, that's not what I wanted. You know, thanks for giving me your crops, but I didn't ask for crops. I asked for this kind of sacrifice. Yeah, and obviously Cain didn't take that well.
Man, that is.
I want to bring up one more thing quickly. I mean, slightly off topic, but it was something that I was talking with another person, another friend of mine, about the other day. Because I do another Bible study every month where we're just basically going through the entire Bible. And we were at the part where you know Israel was told to go into the Promised Land after the Exodus. They were told to go into the Promised Land and take the land that God gave them. Now, the land that God gave them was from the Nile River to the Euphrates, massive amount of land. They decided they didn't want to fight that long, so it only took a narrow strip of it. And they said, we're good. But God said, no, you need to drive all these people out of the land. Otherwise, some of them were Nephilim tribes. And they said, and he said, if you don't drive them out of the land, you know, it's gonna backfire on you. And they said, we're fine. We'll conquer as much as we need. And then we'll just start being prosperous and getting our crops together. But as it turned out, that all the lands that the Israelites refused to conquer became of their enemies, including Edom. And some of them had Nephilim tribes. Do you know where a major Nephilim tribe was? Gaza.
Whoa.
The land of Gaza. Israel never conquered that land. And it was an area where there was a major Nephilim tribe. That's where, I forget the name of the, I think the Rephaim were there. And you can look it up in the Bible. Look up Gaza in the Bible, in the Old Testament. You'll see that's where they had some Nephilim.
Dude, I wonder.
So now you have to this day, that strip of land causing all kinds of turmoil. And
do you think Nephilim are still there? Do you think Nephilim are still there?
I don't think it's unlikely. I think it's a possibility. Underground somewhere.
Yeah, I think there's gotta be a lot of those places when you hear about the
story with Merkel. This guy came on and his family that's in Afghanistan somewhere, they would leave out offerings for a giant cannibalistic thing to keep, his grandmother would do this to keep it off of them. And it's just or, like something they
Joel,
do.
Joel, when he came on our show, the Solomon Islands, Luddy, yeah. That there's still some tribe of giants that they still give offerings to, tobacco and things of that nature. But there was the much more famous instance in Kandahar.
Yeah, the Kandahar mm-hmm. giant, yeah.
Yeah, and so that was like an altercation with a pale, red-haired giant that came out of a cave and speared an American soldier. Ended up killing him, and then they ended up sort of shooting this thing in the face so much that they essentially decapitated it. I believe L.A. Marzulli recaps that story really elegantly.
It feels like, we haven't said this in a while, but it feels like we're just like right there about to see some weird stuff happen. Mm-hmm.
Oh man, wait till we get to the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. That's when the Nephilim come back with the Pale Rider, the Fourth Horseman. So that's we have a lot of
that's
fun.
That's interesting.
With that,
what do you think, Ed? Do you think that instance that became kind of viral about a week or two ago with a pale horse with blood on its chest running through the streets of like Europe or something like that. It felt like, it's hard to say, you know, obviously you can never say for certain, but it felt like a sign. It felt like a symbol. And the way the virality of this horse running through the streets, it's loose somehow. There's blood across its chest. It's all white. And the way that it spread, it became like this little cultural phenom for a second. And it was almost like a little sign. It felt like a little sign to me.
It could be. I believe that God's going to give us as many signs as possible, because he does not want us to go through this time of tribulation. It is not his will. We'll talk about that when we talk about the rapture. That is, it's God's will is not for his wrath to be poured out on humanity. He wants to pour out his wrath on the Elohim. They're going to be kicked out of heaven. They're going to be materialized on earth. And then they're going to have God's wrath poured out on them. That's not God's will for humanity. But humanity, we have free will.
I wish we got to the rapture, because I am like, I don't have arguments with my mother, but I just tell her it feels like she's like, I'm not worried. I ain't going to be here. You know, this kind of stuff. And I was like, it feels like we're going to have to go through something.
Yeah, and it depends. I'm not. How much time do we have left? Because maybe I can whet the appetite.
4 minutes.
Okay. About 4 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, 4 minutes. All right. In 4 minutes, I will just say this is my preview of the rapture, because there are two main controversies about the rapture. One is it even a thing? Is it even biblical, that the idea that, you know, we're going to be, you know, snap a finger and we're going to just go poof and disappear? That's one. And the other is, If there is a rapture, when does it occur? Does it occur before, in the middle of, or at the end of the tribulation? And there's so much controversy over that. I will tell you this, that my take on it is that let the Bible be true and man be wrong. And by that, I mean, I can't get into it because it's gonna get way too deep. We only have like a couple minutes left. So the rapture is something that is definitely going to happen. I'll talk about why it's going to happen, but when it happens, when it's going to happen is really the thing that we need to focus on. And I would just say this, if the Bible says something's going to happen, consider that be sure that it's going to happen. Don't worry about what you think about how it's going to happen. Just look at what the Bible says, because my take on it is going to piss everybody off, but it shouldn't. My take on the rapture should make everybody happy, but it's not. It's actually going to make everybody mad.
Ed told us that he works in some sort of marketing, and I think, yes, he does, because he just sold the next episode for me. Yeah. I'm there.
I'm going to tell you that whatever you think about the rapture, you are right and you're wrong.
Ah, man.
You're right in what you affirm. You're wrong in what you deny.
No, all right,
we're making
questions
a cool thumbnail.
Answered.
You're wrong about the rapture, and everyone was like, "Oh,
there you go."
I'm sure community is going to love that. We're going to get a lot of pushback for it. But it seems that we're getting a lot of that lately.
I get all kinds of crap whenever I talk about the rapture, but I'm like, I didn't tell you were wrong. I told you were right. So why are you mad at me?
Interesting. Well, this was definitely a banger, though. I'm very pleased that we got to go through this. Yeah, we do have to go.
All right, Ed, you can catch Ed at faithbyreason.net. Please go there. We've already had confirmation from people on Twitter. They're like, I am 35 episodes in. Oh, I'm just awesome. Binge watching it. So I'm like, all right, perfect.
Somebody was 50 episodes in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I need to wrap up my last episode then so they can put the cap, because the last episode is a summary that I just haven't had time to put up yet. But yeah.
We're sending them to go check you out. They're also asking for you to be more active on Twitter. I know you have a Twitter, but they're like a lot of our fans.
I technically have one. I'm completely not active on. I'll get it together.
Ed, that's just, I don't know that you did. That's an invitation to a hellscape that I don't know actually improves anyone's life. It's a real terrible place.
It'll and increase to be honest, your reach and decrease your quality of life.
Your morale.
Oh man. All right. So yeah, let's Ed, sorry, go ahead if you have anything else to say.
Nope, just strap it on. Next week we're going to dive into the most controversial aspect of eschatology, where if you ever want to see Christians behaving badly, just go to any website that takes a position on the rapture pre-trib, mid-trib, or post-trib, and read the comments, and you will see Christians literally assaulting each other with scriptures and calling each other really bad names. But it's not necessary. My take on it is going to bring everything together. We should be singing Kumbaya, we love each other, but instead you're going to be saying, I still disagree. And it's going to come down more down to how prideful are you? Are you willing to admit that you might be wrong?
Ooh, that's a challenge. That's a challenge to the audience. Yeah. Guys,
that most people won't meet.
We'll see you next week on Friday with Ed, or whenever Ed is able to do it, and we'll have some other shows for you. But until then, peace out. Have a good weekend, people.
The greatest hypnotist on planet Earth is a oblong box in the corner of the room. It is constantly telling us what to believe is real.
If you can persuade them that what they see with their eyes is what there is to see, you got them. Because they'll laugh in the face of an explanation that portrays the bigger picture of what's happening. And they have.